Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before we get started,
the recording has started.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. And today we have several of our panelists who frequent with us, and we also, you know, want to give a shout out to all of those people who have served into the military, who have fought and died for this country. My father served in the military, so I always post this picture around this time of the year because I can't even imagine what he went through. But I heard conversations that he would talk to some of his friends and some of his relatives about when he served and when he came home, how they treated him. And so I have mixed emotions about this holiday because I do know that we as a people have bled, died, fought, and had the ideology that we were doing a great thing. But then when you came home, some of them came home, they couldn't get fair housing, couldn't get jobs, they couldn't do a lot of things. And I can't even imagine me being on the front lines fighting bullets flying over my head, that to come home to something like that. Now, and I did witness something like that, but it was a little different story with the Vietnam War. See, I was up and around during that time. I almost went there, you know. But we're going to have a discussion about that a little later on in the broadcast. But as always, we have a reading from our co-host, Mr. Satavi Jahi. And I also want to welcome back our other co-host, Mr. Andre Hector.
What's going on, everybody? Andre Hector, how you doing, everybody?
Glad to see you back, sir.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back. It's been quite interesting few weeks dealing with issues. You know, life is going on right now, mm-hmm. So we all know it. COVID-19 is in the way. But this is Mr. Hector, radio personality, motivational speaker, and I'm glad to be back. Good evening, everybody.
All right. Okay, and Brother Satavi, if you're ready, sir, the mic is yours.
Okay, thank you, David. Again, welcome everybody back to the call, and welcome Brother Andre Hector back to the call.
Good afternoon, Satavi.
You're welcome. Our reading for the day comes again from, as we do each and every week, Daily Motivations for African American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. Reading for the day, May 25th. Dial 911. After my daily third pain in my legs feels good, it gives me hope that one day I'll be able to walk, unquote. Daryl Stingley, activist for the physically challenged and also a football player who played for the New England Patriots, ended up getting paralyzed and not being able to walk again. And, you know, and this is, that was his quote about after his physical therapy, that his daily therapy that he, you know, that gives him hope that one day he'll be able to walk again. I don't know if he's walking currently or not, but that was a quote from him. Reading for today: if you could have one wish, what would it be? High on the list would be just give me a life without pain. However, upon a closer look, you may want to think twice. The following story, which ran in a local newspaper nearly 30-some years ago, demonstrated the challenge associated with life free of pain. Little Barbara Smith, born in Dayton, Ohio, almost never cried. She didn't cry when she fell down. She didn't cry when she bumped her head. She didn't cry even when she burned her hand or cut her finger. She cried only when she was hungry or angry. Doctors soon discovered that she had a defect within her central nervous system for which there is no known cure. The child could not feel pain. Medical experts told her mother that she must constantly watch her baby in the event that Barbara might break a bone and continue to play, or before it could be properly set, or cut herself without knowing it. Spanking her to make her worry of life's inadvantage with the little girl no good because she couldn't feel spanking. life without pain was perpetually dangerous. A life without pain is apparently not the Creator's intention. We will always experience the bumps and bruises of life. Only the abnormal never hurt. Success by its nature demands a period of overcoming, a process by which we become strong in broken places. So if you continue to chase your dreams and you find yourself battered and bruised along the way, don't quit. Moments like these will pass. Just simply dial 911 and replenish your soul. Today I acknowledge that pain is natural and that I will overcome it. That's our reading for the day. About, you know, hey, we might wish for life without pain, but thank God you can feel the pain.
Amen. Yeah, it's all the way you look at things sometimes, you know, from a perspective, you know. Sometimes, you know, I said I'm allergic to pain. But then again, if it was not for the pain, I would not have been alerted to some of the ills that I had, you know, that could have, you know, actually taken me out. And so thank God for the pain. And then sometimes that same pain, I guess, when you bring it to an emotional standpoint, sometimes it can scar you for life. But like I said, it's all the way you look at it. You know, you can overcome in a lot of situations. But again, I want to welcome everybody who's on the call this evening, and especially to those who have served in the military. I want to say personally, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, because, see, you know, I know we got three or four branches of the military. I know we have the Army in the house. We got the, I think, the Navy in the house, as well as the Marines. And they are part of our team, and they experience a military life. I know my brother, Walter Murphy, he made a career out of it, him and his wife. And so, but I just want to ask all of y'all, I'm going to bring you in one at a time.
Bill.
And there's another military. See, those who are non-military, we're being outnumbered now.
Yep.
All right. So, but in any case, I'm going to ask each and every one of y'all, because we had a little brief discussion before the broadcast with this. I know that when you go into the military, some of you may have expectations of what you know, what you expected. Some of you were dragged into the military. Some of you joined up because you thought, you know, you thought it was the thing to do at the time. But once you have served, once you have given your dedication, your blood, sweat, and tears into the military, and then you come home, and then you see some of the conditions that the United States is in. Now, I was saying earlier, this is my country. I'm not planning on going anywhere, no time soon. Anyway, now I'm not planning on leaving no place. But I think we all want to make it a better place to live, not only for ourselves, but for our children and our children's children. And so, Fran Allen, I'm going to start with you. You went into the military. And I just want to say, when you went in there, what was your expectations? And when you came out, how did you feel about the state of the country? Fran, can you hear me?
Yes, David, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay, I got kicked off the video, so I came back on my phone. So what's the question, dear? I missed the question.
Okay, the question was, when you joined the military, you might have had some expectations. I just wanted to know, what were your expectations when you went in? And then when you came out the military and you see the condition of the country and the conditions of black people in this country, how did you feel about that after you gave your time to serve this country?
Oh, wow. My parents didn't have the ability to send me to college. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. My parents didn't have the ability to send me to college. They didn't have the funds to pay tuition or any of that stuff. So I had to figure it out on my own. And I was a bit headstrong, a little hard-headed, pretty independent thinking at 18, coming out of high school. And my grandmother would always tell me, you know, you're going to have to learn how to deal with authority. You don't do well with authority. You're going to have to learn how to deal with authority, or you're going to have a hard life. And the more I thought about it, the more I knew that she was really correct. You know, if everybody has somebody to answer to. So I figured I was going to go to the one place at that point in my life that I knew if you could not learn discipline and a respect for authority in this place, it was not possible for you to learn it. So I went in the Marine Corps. I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps at 18, right out of high school. Now, I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but it taught me a whole bunch of stuff about me that I did not know. So my expectations going in were to be introduced to exposure and opportunity. Those were two things that my parents weren't in a position to give me. Exposure to people, places, and things that I had not been, had not met, and had not seen, or opportunities to advance and be successful. And I spent all of 7 years, 10 months, and 16 days in that place. And now it is 40-something years later, because I went in 75, I got out in 82. And in that 7 years, 10 months, and 16 days, I learned that there is nothing that I cannot do. There are some things that I choose not to do, some things I'm smart enough not to try to do, but nothing that I cannot accomplish if I truly want it and I set my mind to it. That's what the Marine Corps taught me about me. My outcome after having had that military experience, I asked myself, well, you know, would I do it again? Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. The education it gave me about myself was priceless, and I would not have learned those things about me any other way. So what did I get out of it? Well, I got an income because I got injured, and so I have a disability. So that's money I'll get for the rest of my natural life. I got a benefit for them to pay for my education, and that is how I ended up with my bachelor's degree from Johns Hopkins University. The housing benefit, the housing certificate benefit, is what made it possible for me to purchase my first home that I own to this day. My health care, I go to the VA to get health care. That is health care that I don't pay for, like Blue Cross Blue Shield. I paid for it with years of my life, and now I go and I get that entitlement. And I have a lifetime employment reinstatement right. So if I really wanted to go get a job right now, I could go to the federal government and I could get a job right now. I don't want to work for the federal government. I'm through with them, but I could go if I wanted to. And the years of my military service counted toward my retirement with the federal government. So when I got, 13 years or whatever it was, the rest of the years to make up the 24 plus that I served came from my military time that I bought back. So would I do it again? Absolutely, absolutely. Do I think other people should, these youngsters? Oh, yeah, because our kids lack discipline. Our kids truly do lack discipline. Parents are scared to death of these children because the government told the parents they can't discipline their children the way they see fit. Every time you look at your kids cross-eyed, they want to pick up the phone, dial 911, talking about child abuse. Well, let me tell you something about child abuse. I had a paddle, and I can't go to jail now because my kids are grown. But when they got out of pocket, I got that paddle. I went to work, and then I put their name on the back of the paddle so they could remember, and everybody that saw the paddle could remember that they got tagged with the paddle on this day. And them not wanting other people to see that their name was on the paddle 2, 3, 8, 12, 15 times, they quit acting up after a while, and I put the paddle down. But the military service gave me a healthy self-discipline. It gave me a healthy self-confidence. But more than that, it gave me a healthy self-respect. Because, see, I'm not going to do just anything with anybody. And my life is, I love my life. I love my life. I love where I am in my life. But most of that came as a result of what I learned and what I experienced and what I benefited from through my military service. So a lot of people don't have those experiences, but I do. Was it hard? Oh, of course it was. Did I get chased around for the wrong reasons? Oh, of course I did. Were there racist people that I had to encounter? Absolutely. But my will to succeed was stronger than their will to conquer me. That's how I see it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic because, like I say, you're getting benefits and it's still paying off to you.
Yeah.
And like I say, it helps shape your life. And like you said, the most important thing you mentioned was discipline.
Yeah.
You know, and it helped mold you. I see Bill had left the house because I know Bill told me some stories about when he was in the military. But I'm going to go to the career man, right? Mr. Murphy, are you still available?
Oh, yeah. How y'all doing?
Hello.
I'm going to ask you this question in a different way. Now I've known you. You was one of those Vietnam veterans, and you've been to I think Iraq and all them other places, and I know originally you did not volunteer to go into the military. You were drafted, and then I remember that you after you came back home and you saw what was going on in the world, as y'all call it. And then you didn't like what you see, so you went back and this, that. But again, I'm going to ask you a similar question. What did you get out of the military, and now that you're out of the military by being a black man, and you see the way the same country that you served and you fought for, And then when you come back home, they are, like I said, Fran just mentioned some great benefits. But on the flip side, there are some disparities because, like I said, a lot of folks I know, a lot of Vietnam, I mean, veterans are having a rough time sometimes. You know, they had all types of trap, you know, things that happened to them in the military, and their mental capacities is not always there. But at the same time, As the main thing I'm trying to get to as a black man, after all of them years that you put in, how do you think your country responded back to you by being a black man with some of the things that, like I said, when y'all came back from the war, you weren't treated well? You know, you were looked down upon because they say as a black man, you were fighting the wrong war or something like that. So what is your take on that? You know, I know I'm jumping around the bush a little bit because, but like I say, what did you get out of the military, and what were your expectations while you were in there? And when you came home and you see some of the things that's going on today, I'm talking about racial-wise and everything, you know, how do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, you know, most people tell you already that there is nothing new under the sun. Come on, y'all. You know, this ain't a new day. We know that there has always been this element that always disliked us, and there's a certain element of black folk that don't like other folk. That's the way that goes. So that's one thing. But let's go back to 1969 when I got drafted. I could have got drafted in 68 or 67, okay? But I slipped and slid because of whatever, and they didn't really give me until I was almost 20 years old. And the beauty of it all is that I was just a little bit mature. Man, you got to understand something. I come from the hard streets of Baltimore City. I was born on Pennsylvania Avenue, lived on Pennsylvania Avenue a couple of times. All along Baker Street was my history, period. Bottom line, okay? And so I grew up kind of hard, rough, and this and that and the other, right edges, but at the same time, I've always saw myself as being a regular, decent person. Nothing special. So I get drafted, and out of the nowhere, I get put in leadership positions. So I didn't get a chance to do, you know, all the, you know, the KP and all that kind of stuff. I kind of slid through that. And then I come to Fort Lee for my, what you call it, advanced training, AIT. And they look at my record from basic training, which I was a three-year disciple. They turn around and make me the class president. Now, I'm sorry to say this. I'm not trying to brag about that. It's just that there is certain elements of the military that is every day. And if you do what, if you have notice the guidelines, and you do what you're supposed to do, you'll do fine. But the ones who don't wind up, you know, breaking the rules, and they catch all kinds of hell. And when it comes down to racism, I was in charge. As a trainee, I'm on a little, you know, y'all know talking about little imitation strikes and basic training, okay? So I got all these white boys under me. I got two in my squad leaders. So understand, I'm coming from a different perspective. This is 1969, 1 year after 1968. Do I need to say any more about that, okay? So now, here I come. I go to Korea. My first overseas tour, I go to Korea, come home, and I get out. I have done 19 months in 2 days. They give me my little ET, my little PCS papers, and I'm out. I come home, and I'm back in Baltimore City. And I'm working at all the little rinky-dink places like Sunny Surpluses and places like that. I hope I ring a bell to some of y'all from the old soul, that old thing, you know. You know. And I had just come out of the military with all this military stuff. You hear what I'm saying? In Sunny Surplus. So here I am. This is in 1970 now. And the drugs are going crazy in Baltimore City, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pandemic of drug use in Baltimore City in 1970, and you know where I'm coming from. Anybody who was around, all you got to do is just pick up some old newspaper, they will tell you. There was an epidemic of drugs. Heroin, for the truly first time, really came to the city in mass numbers and taking out men and women. And so I'm sitting around this stuff, and I'm living in an apartment, you know, and I'm not making any money. I'm making barely a little over minimum wage, and I'm saying, wait a minute. He's in the military making half of what I was making out here. Was better in the military than it was on the streets of Baltimore City doing that trade. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I made a decision. That one of the guys that another best friend of mine named Melvin Johnson, talked to him 2 days ago. We were both working at Sunny Surplus Warehouse down on Franklin Town Road. And so we wound up having this conversation just yesterday about the idea of I got away. He says, yeah, man, you want to go down that same road with the rest of some of the other guys had I stayed in Baltimore City. So with the military, it not only saved me, mm-hmm. it was a wonderful fix for me. Mm-hmm. And so as far as the prejudice inside the military, of course. But I've always had enough power, enough gumption, enough understanding to get that stuff squared away really quick, because the military was one of the first places where integration was really made law in America. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got, that was in the 40s, so by the time I got in there in 1969, they were already well established. I had some old first sergeants that were black and some old majors and stuff like that were black. So we had been in there for a minute. But what most important is this. I wound up going to Vietnam when I went back in, straight to Vietnam. So I come back, and I can't even wear my uniform. I just spent a whole year in a war-torn state, a war-torn country, bullets flying everywhere, bombs flying, napalm everywhere, all the time. And I come home, and I can't even wear this uniform that I'm supposed to be going to another country and I'm fighting for. And I'm telling you, that is not a great feeling for anyone. And then on top of that, you know, when you think about who America was at that time, even then, it was what you call an unjust and an unpopular war. And a lot of people had a lot of rights to feel as though that as a black man, you're going to a foreign country and fighting for a country that disowns you or marginalizes you or treats you like a fifth-class citizen. Now, I'm going to tell y'all, that's all true. But then again, there's always that segment of our society that will always treat you like that, will always have you in mind to do you some harm simply because of who you are. Not who you are, but what you are. And so I just want to throw that at you guys. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the military has done nothing but great things for me. It educated me. It took me around the world. I've seen a bit of everything. I have been to more countries that I would have never gotten the opportunity to go to had it not been for the military. It ain't too many of them I missed. I thought North Pole, South Pole, I think I've been everywhere else. Africa, I think I've been everywhere else, right? All the other continents. And so it doesn't make me special, because if you, like all the military, you get in there for a while, you spend more than 5 years in there, you're going to have an experience. You're going to have a hell of an experience, and you're going to grow exponentially simply because of the people that's in it and the structure in which it provides for you. So I just want to lay that out there to you guys, and I'm telling y'all, it's not for everybody. I'm telling you, it is not for everyone. Yeah. For those people who go in there and they serve, they do their time, and leave them with a discharge, you did fine. And one other thing before I go, I am not a draftee or draft proponent. Simply because I believe you should have a choice in what you want to do with your time. I believe that if you're a young man or young woman these days, I honestly believe that an 18-month, 2-year hitch in the military would be just fine. Back to you, David.
Okay. I'm coming away because of my partner, Bill Gooden. But, you know, I told people, I laugh about it, man, but I think I may have missed an opportunity, too, that could have molded my life. You see, I was... while you was overseas, I was being a rebel. We was against everything. We was even against people over 30. Generation gap. Didn't make no difference. You didn't know nothing. You're over 30. So.
Hey, David, didn't do a book like that.
So while he was overseas, he was staying in the country. While he was in the country,
but on college campus, they were sending young men out all over the city, and they were teaching them about revolution. You know, being all the black movement, the Panthers was going strong. NAACP, SNCC, all of them black organizations were straight heavy during that time, 68, 69, and 70. And I was one of them. I liked what they were saying. Because you wasn't getting treated. And I was mad because of you. I was my brother sitting over there getting shot at, and I'm sitting with my mother in my place.
Yeah, my brother, David, go for it, man.
But then the day came, I got that letter. And they wanted me to go, but somebody said, well, you know, young man, if you go down there and enlist before you go in there and duck, you get a better deal.
Right.
Okay, right.
And so I did that.
Uh-huh.
I go down there, and I was all ready. I'm ready to go. I just knew I was going into, and they got you one little question on this document.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, are you an alcoholic or something down there, medical condition?
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and I took down there, yes. And they refused me.
That's right.
They took me home. But I still had the letter.
Right.
And so the time for them to draft me, I'm mad now. I come there drinking that more. I'm mad at me. I had half a pipe with me. And I go through all that the medical thing and all of that. They put me on this bus. They sent me to Fort Dix.
Right.
And I thought, man, I raised so much cane on that bus. You wouldn't take me 2 weeks ago when I just this day. And I checked that same bus this time. It didn't matter this time.
Right. That was drafted versus a different story. Right, yeah.
And so I raised so much cane, the MPs had to take me off the bus.
Get out of here, David.
Because I was going after the bus. You better not move this bus.
What a story.
Yeah. But in any case, they took me off and sent me home. They say he ain't right.
Go ahead. You was able to be a dog straight too.
Yeah, but you know, during that time, you know, but I still, like I said, I know, you know, discipline, I didn't have any.
Yeah.
It's coming up because, in my time, in my neighborhood, like you say, I had to grow up fast in the spirit.
Yeah, man.
And like I say, you couldn't. And when you're at that age, you think you know everything. Don't know nothing. You know, nobody couldn't tell you nothing. So, and I was hanging around people I shouldn't have been hanging around. 10 years older than me and stuff. You know, doing everything I wasn't supposed to be. Now I talked to my buddy Bill. That's why I said these things. I talked to my buddy Bill, and he told me some things why he went into the military. And stuff. He kind of mentioned to me, I'm going to keep it real, Bill. He told me.
Keep it real.
Yeah, he told me that he was a rebel. I think because that Bill always kind of, in his heart, was always a rebel. But in any case, Bill, when you went into the military, what was your expectation and why you was in there? And when you came home, did it serve your purpose, or was, you know, what's your story about that?
Well, you know, first of all, I went in the military because I wanted to get away from home.
He said he wanted to get away from home.
That was my primary reason.
I understand.
You know, but at the same time, I was somewhat conscious when I went in the military. So I'm going to be honest. You know, I told your brother many times, I wish I was more disciplined, because when I went into the military, then I went in for 3 years, but I made two, and they kicked me out because I was too militant, and, you know, I was hanging with the black people. You know, we'd stop in the middle of the steps and give each other dap and holding up everybody.
What's going on
there? So, you know, I was getting called in and, you know, and talked to, and I said, man, fuck you pigs. Excuse the language, you know. But, you know, so I started reading a lot of black books, and I was hanging with the wrong black people, man, in terms of, but I will say this, you know, I don't advocate the military for everybody, but it's a lot that you can get out of it, you know, because like I said, I was 18. I wish I could have did 20 years, then I could get out with a pension for the rest of my life. I mean, I'm thankful that I got an honorable discharge, but I still can go get the VA benefits and that type of stuff. But, yeah, you know, you have to really be disciplined, man, because you ain't disciplined, and, you know, you can't take directions from people. You ain't going to make it in the military. I mean, it's the bottom line. You know, so when I came home, then I came home more militant than I went into before I left. So it had to be an adjustment that you had to make, because people thought I was going crazy, man. I'm kind of ashamed of some of the things I've done, but it is what it is. But anyway, I'm surviving.
Oh man, that's good.
Brother Tommy, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, I was getting to you because I've listened to some fantastic stories, you know, some pros and cons about the military, and you had an experience as well. So what was your expectations when you went in, and once you came out, knowing what, you know, how you are and what's going on with us as a people, what would you recommend for our military is concerned?
That's a great question, David, and I guess, you know, I went in the military young, naive. I was the son of a vet who had been in the Navy, who really didn't want a sign for me to go in the military, because he told me up front, my dad told me up front, he said, I don't know if this is going to work for you, because you have a hard time taking orders from me. So,
they're gonna make you or break you.
Yeah, but I say this much about the military, even though I did serve a little stint in Vietnam, is that to this day, as a couple of me and my veteran friends talk about, the military messes you up for life, because to this day, I still wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, because that was kind of discipline that you know you. You wake up, because in the morning they give you 5 minutes, you know, to get your three S's in, and that's shower and shave. That was you know, you had to do all that 5 minutes, you know, and so I used to make my bed up at night, because if your bed had to be made up, they could bounce a quarter off of it. I would make mine up at night and then would sleep underneath of my bed, because that was That was one of the ways of getting out of that in the morning, because besides everything else, that was one of the things you had to do. Like I said, I went.
Breaking up, Tommy Jahi.
Bro, sometimes you kind of break it up like it's crackling in your voice or something. Yeah, see if you can get closer to your mic or to the phone.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sounds
okay.
Good.
Yeah. My father worked for Naval Air Security Group in Fort Meade, Maryland. And so I had my pick of the litter in terms of service schools and other stuff. I chose military service school where I learned how to work on airplanes. Well, not really work on airplanes, but the guy that was like Mr. Goodwin that would direct people to where to get the plane serviced at, you know. You know, that's why to this day I could be flying on an airplane and I can listen to the engine and I can tell you what's wrong with it.
Wow, that's good.
You know, and it's good, but it's not good because you know, you freak people out. Because
you know, you're on that plane, huh?
You're on that plane, and you're like, hey, man, the engine's skipping. You know, it ain't that can be happening. Or if the hydraulic system is not working right because the hydraulics are working on the plane correctly, you shouldn't hear a thump when it opens up. It should be like, it should be real,
right,
real smooth.
Right, right.
You know, and when you don't hear that thump, like, boom, boom, you know, then somebody ain't worked on the hydraulics. Anyway, you know, I learned all of those different skills. And so, because I went in the military in 1970, and yes, Baltimore was a mess in 1970. I went in the military to get away from the mess that was going on in the city. And me and a good friend of mine, Michael Brown, we signed up for the buddy program. We were supposed to, what the buddy program was, we were supposed to go through each experience that we had and we were going to go through in the military together. And that's how they got me to sign up. Well, the first lie they told was that, because we got the boot camp. We went to the same boot camp, Great Lakes, Illinois, to the Naval Training Center there. But we ended up in two different companies, and our paths never crossed again in terms of the military. Yeah, we was away with each other in the chow, but, you know, that was about it. But anyway, that was the first lie that was told. So, you know, that I went through that experience, you know, with, you know, and I was supposed to be in boot camp with my buddy. We went to Evanston High School together. We both came out in a class of seven. We both volunteered. And that was one of the conditions that we volunteered under, that we would spend time together in the military. So that way we could, you know, that was what the recruiter talked about, that, you know, hey, y'all buddies in high school, y'all can be buddies in the military. Well, that never happened. So, get through basic training boot camp. And I go from there, the Milton Naval Air Station, and there at the Naval Air Station, I went to Class A school, and, you know, so the training was great. From there, I got assigned to USS Constellation, CVA 64 attack, and I was assigned to, I was part of ship's company. And with ship's company, what we did, the carrier, which had on an average of like 6,000 men, floating city. And out of that floating city, you might have had like 500 blacks that would be carrying 5,500 whites. And so the there.
Check your connection. You're breaking up.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
All right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. While there, I had an experience where we had a brother who was a CC, which was a communication technician, who had access to information. And so he had access to where they stored the nuclear bombs and stuff that was on the ship. We go blow up the nukes, man, we can make a statement. And, you know, we can die for the cause.
Whoa.
You
Oh, Lord.
When you blow up the nukes, you're going to die, too.
Good God. Making World War with... III. You sound just like Barry White.
Well, you're mistaken for me.
Oh, this is one part, right? This is one part that Mr. Barry White sings. He goes, "Hey, baby, Joe, move." Can you say that one time for me, sir? Just one time. Say, baby, the ladies need to hear it. One time. Just say it one more time.
I'm not sure what you said. What you asked me to say?
I need you to say what Barry White said in one of his songs.
Mr. Hacker, you better be careful what you ask for.
Boy,
you know me. I like to start trouble.
You might end up getting a concert.
That's right.
Hey,
I have a repertoire.
Hey, just one time, people. The ladies want to hear it. Say, "Hey, babe, it's your move." Say it one time for me.
Hey, babe, it's your move.
You gotta sing it.
Hey, Andre, I hear you put me on the spot, and normally I would be able to do that for you. But right now, I don't have the tune inside of me, but, you know, there is some Barry White that I will do for you guys later, okay? Fair enough?
Guess what?
I'll hold off for you on Barry White. That's not a problem. I will do it.
Yeah, but guess what? I was perusing on Facebook one day. And I come across this familiar face. Singing their heart out, Mr. Andre Hector.
Whoa. What about me?
Yeah.
What happened?
You kept a secret from us, man. You a singer too, right?
How you know about that?
See, I tell you, everything is easy when you put stuff online.
I'm back.
Lord have mercy. Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'm a singer. I sing a little bit. I got a daughter who
Mr. Murphy has some background singers, too.
Uh-oh.
You know what? Somebody did put me on Facebook. Me, my daughter, and another young lady named Unique from, we were singing in the living room, and they put me on blast. I didn't know it was on Facebook. I know. Are you talking about that?
Yes, yeah. That
was recently.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Officer Tommy, are you back?
Yes, sir, I'm back.
Yeah, finish your story, because I want to know, man. You're going to blow up a shit, man. I got to hear the end of this. Creep one of them about big boys through the city. Man, come on.
Since you guys put me on blast,
hold on 1 minute. Let me get him out, then we come right back to you.
All right.
I guess I'm going to have to be careful about you, too.
Hey, babe, it's your move.
Yeah.
Call your brother, Tommy. On you, sir.
We went through that experience, and experience also went through for us. I was in the Philippines, and friend and Walter Murphy says that the United States military will, you know, have you go to places that in your wildest dreams as a child growing up in the village that you would never experience. And so, you know, I'm in the Philippines, and in the Philippines it was this place called Longapo City, Subic Bay. And so, you know, I'm a venturist. I decided to venture off from the beaten track that they had places you could go to. And when you would go to these different places, these cities, you know, one of the things that United States military always did, except for they wasn't able to do that in the Iraqi war, was that they would have places where you could go to, and, you know, for the guys, you could relieve yourself in terms of what they call prostitution. And so what happened was, I was in the Philippines, and so I'm out and about, and I decided to go off the beaten path and decide to venture out. And that's when it really hit me about certain behaviors and things. So what happened was, I being off and ventured away from the area of the city, is I go to this rural village, and Filipinos, you know, they was like, "Hey, brother, what you doing here? And why my wife,
you don't belong
my
here,
my mother, my auntie,
my grandmother, the only way they can make money for you, for your country, is they need to be prostitutes. What if I came to your country and we did with people? I was messed up then. I couldn't, you know, excuse the language. I couldn't buy no pussy no more. It was like they just ruined it for me. You know, and so the young guy, 18 years old, was like, I came back, you know, and was sharing that story with the other brothers. They was like, oh, so now you're going to be conscientious about buying cops. I was like, man, I said, what if they could come? I said, what if people could come to our countries and that's the only way our sisters, our mothers could earn money, to be a prostitute for this country? So I had some very, very unique experiences in terms of those experiences. And, you know, those were some of the stories that really stand out. And then the other thing was when I got discharged and came back home, I got a general discharge under honorable conditions. I came back home. And I went to, at that time it was called Friendship Airport.
Right.
So like I said, I told you, my MOS was that I was the person, I was like Mr. Goodrich. You put a plane out there, I listened to it, I could tell you what was wrong with it, and it was service, whether you go to the jet mechanic, or you go to the hydraulic mechanic, you know, where did you go? And God told me I failed the test. I'm like, I'm saying, what do you mean I failed the test? You didn't pass the test that we had for you. I was like, it must be a mistake.
Did they ever tell your score?
Huh?
Do you remember your scores?
No, all I know was you told me I had failed. And I asked him, could I see the results? And, you know, he never could show me the results. He said, well, you know, I can't show you the results. I said, well, there's
something
crazy with that. He said, what makes you think we could hire you anyway? He says, because if we... So, you know, that would discourage other people. He says, I got a lot of white guys here who have similar experiences. He says, but the starting salary, and this is back again, 1972, the starting salary is $50,000 a year for the positions you apply for. And back then, you can imagine $50,000. I mean, that was like, wow.
That's a lot of money.
It's
a nice piece of change.
So, you know, so needless to say, I didn't get the job, and that started me into, my protest career as a person challenging authority, and ultimately led to me joining Black Panther Party, the US organization, and several other organizations.
Nice.
And so, you know, that's sort of the summation of what my military experience was like and then life after the military. So, you know, I've been a sort of like a radical ever since then. And, hey, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
But, you know, that's amazing. Like I said, all of your story is truly amazing, and because I know how you all are today. But at the same time, those life experiences molded you one way or the other. And again, I still thank you for your services that you gave, you know, for this country. But now that said, here we are, like I said, we don't use up most of our time, but here we are, you know, on this holiday, and we sitting in a pandemic right now. Here we are right now. In this country, we have what they call a commander-in-chief who runs the military, someone with that caliber is put in a position like that. Me and Bill talk about this all the time, who's really not qualified.
All right, now.
And like I say, now he got all of these trained professionals out here, trained professionals. Put all these years of work in there.
All these advisors.
And then you got all of these trained professionals who's in intelligence agencies and stuff like this. And this man comes along my way or the highway. This I know better than they do. I know, you know what I mean, this kind of attitude. And it's like a slap in the face because, like I say, all your dedication. And then we as a country, or I don't know, they say we chose him, but I don't even believe that, really. I think it was taken, but in any case. But like I say, even if I were, like you say, Bill, I mean, Satavi just said he was trained for a position to do the certain type of work. He couldn't get hard because of his skin. That's the bottom line. And at least he was qualified. Bill talk about this all the time. A dog catcher had to be qualified to be a dog catcher. So why in the world would a man in the highest position in this country at least have some type of qualifications? Anybody, if you know, because they got money and prestige, they can toss their head in and say they can be the president of the United with no experience in that particular area. But in any case, that's just my thoughts. But that being said, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Hector, I know you've been wanting to say something. Go ahead and take it from here, sir.
Kind of quiet today, but what I wanted to say was, you know, hello, everybody. You know, Henri Hector here, radio personality, motivational speaker. I just want to say happy Memorial Day to all of you. And for those of you who is just knowing the name Memorial Day, you know, but we have to understand where it came from and what it's all about. Memorial Day is a federal holiday in the United States for honoring and mourning our military personnel who have left us. Being courageous and honorable in their position to keep America's dream alive, and if you will, who have died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. So the holiday is now observed, and, you know, we're observing it today, and this thing goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, and in the late 1800s. So, you know, we just are here to honor. And now it's like we're dealing with this pandemic. We're dealing with a new enemy, an enemy that we cannot see. And so here on our own soil and the soil of many other countries, they're fighting this pandemic. And for those who have lost their lives, we honor you because you have fought a good fight. You have kept your faith. And in spite of the circumstances, we're here, and we have some people who have passed away, even being on the front line of this pandemic, who have sacrificed their life. Doctors who are supposed to be in retirement, but yet because they love the people, they want to help, they have an enthusiasm, skill, they want to stay inside and help people. And some of them doctors have lost their lives in this right now. So we're dealing with the governor's orders. The president here has gave some orders to, you know, kind of open up the government. We're in phase one right now. And, you know, a lot of people feel some type of way. You know, here we're dealing with Maryland. Governor Hogan and the stay-at-home order was lifted at 5 p.m. on May the 15th, allowing the lifting of the restrictions that were put in place to stop the spread of COVID-19. Not all counties are going to go through this plan, but they're doing something similar. And so it's just a matter of executing their plans, putting it together, looking at the levels of the spread of the virus. We're coming to a plateau, if you will. Here's what is allowed in each jurisdiction. Guys of you who are looking on Facebook and Facebook Live, Instagram, and YouTube. You can see the numbers here, and you can see what's going on. You know, I feel some type of way about it. There are other people who might feel some type of way about it. You know, just staying home and getting that cabin fever, but others, there are people who want to go back to work. But some people are questioning, is it too soon? You know, those are the everyday questions that we want to, you know, we ask ourselves all the time. So, you know, all I can say is let us govern ourselves accordingly. Use common sense. That's all I can say. Use common sense, and even in a time like this. You know, because at the end of the day, you might not show symptoms, but you could be a carrier, and, you know, you just be mindful of that, you know. Just because you're feeling great don't mean you are great. You know, just take care of yourself, and that's all I got to say to that.
Okay, then. Well, you know, you said a mouthful because, like I say, we have soldiers on many fronts. They don't always have to be in the United States military. You know, there's people fighting battles on a constant basis. Even the National Black Unity News fighting on a constant basis. You know, And we have, I think we got a lot of heroes in the National Black Unity News as well. But at the same time, you know, there's old saying, we have to keep on fighting until the victory is won. And like I said, there's many battles on different many fronts. And like I say, we have in here, we had the Marines in the house, we had the Army in the house, the Navy in the house, and they're all, you know, different branches, but they all for the same cause. They all, you know, under the banner of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, since, like I say, matter of fact, that will be the topic, and we're going to broadcast. I'm going to put a little broadcast on it because there's some things we need to address about us as a people. So, you know, maybe we can share some light on it and bring people to consciousness about, like I said, I think we have been bamboozled. I think we have been trained very well. I think we have been trained not to like each other. Or like one another, but like our own selves.
Next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That being said, you know, usually I would let everybody close out, but you know it's 8:35, and so I'm gonna close the thing. I'm gonna say good night, and it was a great conversation.
Night,
and I thank y'all again for your services.
Andre,
yes, sir.
I'm gonna do the very right thing for you in a few. Okay, I promise you, my brother.
Good night, everybody.
And next week, we're going to make him sing for us, Andre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, y'all.
Okay.
Goodbye.